Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1917, with a release date of May 9, 2014, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. The killer of 8 people, including a ham radio operator, admits his guilt. Canadian hams grant a new band from 472 to 479 kilohertz. KICSAT may not be able to deploy its cargo of Sprite picosats. United States ARDF registration extended to June 1st, and a long trek across Europe and Asia for a ham radio floater balloon. All this and more on Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 1917, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is this week's report.
The Southern California man who killed 8 people, including a ham radio operator sitting in his truck, has pleaded guilty to all charges. Amateur Radio Newsline's Joe Mell, K0OV, has the details.
David Couette, N6DAC, was a star high school athlete who turned down college scholarships and NFL scouts so he could join the Navy and serve in Vietnam. He became a father of 3 who loved off-roading in his Land Rover. David was age 64 on October 12, 2011, when he was shot down in cold blood outside Salon Meritage in Seal Beach, California. He was the last of 8 persons killed by 44-year-old Scott DeCry, a man enraged by a custody dispute with his wife, who was the first of the victims. DeCry, who was heavily armed and wearing a bulletproof vest, says he shot N6DAC because he thought he was an off-duty or undercover officer. After DeCry initially pled not guilty, the goal of Orange County's district attorney was to have DeCry's trial within a year, but that was not to be. First, the defense wasn't ready. Then there were more delays when his public defender alleged that DeCry's rights were violated because a jailhouse informant in an adjacent cell enticed DeCry to make statements that were recorded. But on Friday, May 2nd, DeCry went back to Superior Court and pleaded guilty to all 8 murders, telling the judge, "It's the right thing to do, Your Honor." Prosecutors were quick to point out that this was not a plea bargain, and they are still seeking the death penalty. The judge is expected to rule on that matter in June after fully examining defense allegations regarding the informant. Even if the judge leaves the death penalty on the table, DeCry's fate is not expected to be placed into the hands of a jury until sometime next year. After the May 2nd hearing, N6DAC's son Paul Couette is quoted as saying that he does not believe that DeCry is remorseful, and that if anybody deserves the death penalty, he does. From Orange County, California, this is Joe Mell, K0 Oscar Victor, for Amateur Radio Newsline.
DeCry still faces 8 life sentences without the possibility of parole if the judge rules out the death penalty. Hams in Canada will soon have access to the 472 to 479 kilohertz band. This with the release of the new Canadian Table of Frequency Allocations by telecommunications regulator Industry Canada. While approved by the International Telecommunications Union at WRC 2012, each country had to implement regulations for its amateurs before the band is available. Operations are subject to the international footnotes, which limit power to 5 watts effective radiated power except in certain areas within 500 miles of certain other countries. Radio Amateurs of Canada says that its 0 to 30 megahertz band planning committee will be proposing a suitable band plan to enable best use of this new, very narrow band. Canadian hams with comments and suggestions can send them to the committee via email to rachq@rac.ca. Canadian amateur operators have recently secured 2 new segments of spectrum thanks to the hard work of their national society. The 60-meter band channels were made official a few months ago as well. Ham radio volunteers affiliated with Skywarn and Ares were called out when an outbreak of severe weather raked across about one-third of the United States beginning on Sunday, April 27th. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bruce Tennant, K6PZW, has more.
The powerful thunderstorms across the Midwest and South sparked a deadly outbreak of severe weather that would span 5 days and sweep across 20 states. The brutal weather system soon spawned a series of lethal tornadoes, torrential downpours, life-threatening floods, wind gusts up to 80 miles per hour, and a number of landslides. At least 34 deaths occurred in Oklahoma, Alabama, Arkansas, Mississippi, and Tennessee, with hundreds of injuries also reported. Mike Corey is the ARRL Emergency Preparedness Manager. He said he'd received reports of weather observations from hams involved in Skywarn, helping by providing tornado warnings issued by the National Weather Service. Corey said that many people heeded those warnings, sheltered in underground bunkers as homes and buildings buckled above them. According to Corey, in one instance, skywarned volunteers traced a tornado's movement throughout Arkansas. While forecasters watched by radar, they also are able to monitor real-time reports from skywarn on one of its nets. All of these sightings came from very reliable on-the-ground observations. With the severe weather of late spring and summer now here, skywarn and amateur radio emergency service volunteers across the Midwest and South Central states will be on standby alert for some time. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bruce Tennant, K6PZW reporting.
According to the ARRL, members of the Amateur Radio Emergency Service were also involved as severe rainstorms led to flood warnings being issued for some areas. An unexpected reset of the master clock on KICSAT may mean that the deployment of the 104 Sprite 437 MHz microsatellites will not take place before the KICSAT CubeSat burns up as it re-enters the Earth's atmosphere. It appears that the reset happened sometime in the morning of Wednesday, April 30th, and was not the result of a power issue, as the batteries have been holding steady around 6.5 volts. Rather, it seems the likely cause was radiation, setting the deployment countdown for KICSAT back to 16 days. Controllers of KICSAT have been trying every possible contingency. KICSAT's uplink radio, which could use to command the deployment, can't turn on unless the batteries reach 8 volts, and it doesn't look like they'll reach that level in time. Three crew members currently aboard the International Space Station are scheduled to end more than 6 months on the orbiting laboratory Tuesday, May 13th, U.S. time, and NASA television will provide complete coverage of their return to Earth. Expedition 39 Commander Koichi Wakata, KZ-5ZTA, Flight Engineer Rick Mastriaco, KZ-5ZTE, and Soyuz Commander Mikhail Tiorin, RA-9ANS, will unlock their Soyuz spacecraft from the station at 6:33 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The spacecraft will land in Kazakhstan at 9:57 p.m. NASA TV coverage of Expedition 39's return to Earth will begin Monday, May 12th, with the change of command ceremony in which Wakata will turn over command of station operations to Steve Swanson. Coverage will continue Tuesday and Wednesday with Expedition 39 landing and post-landing activities. The return of the three spacefaring astrohams will wrap up their 188 days on orbit since launching from Kazakhstan last November 7th. An update to a story in last week's Newsline regarding the USA's National Championships of On-Foot Direction Finding will take place June 5th through 8th near Boston. After our newscast went to air, we received word that the deadline for signing up to compete has been extended until June 1st. These championships are open to anyone who can safely navigate the woods by themselves. Competitors bring their own direction finding gear, and extra gear is sometimes available for loan from other attendees. For more about the international sport of on-foot amateur radio direction finding, plus details about the Boston competitions, go to www.homingin.com. And as we have said before, homing in is spelled as one word. In DX up front, E21EIC has told the Ohio Penn DX newsletter that he received a new Thailand club call sign of E20AX that will be hosted by his station. This new call will be used for training new hams, for contest operations, and by guest operators. If you make contact, QSL via E21EIC electronically using OQRS or Logbook to the World. And four members of the Yamato Amateur Radio Club will be on the air from Rarotonga in the South Cook Islands from May 22nd to the 31st. Activity will be on all high-frequency bands from 160 through 10 meters using CW, SSB, and RTTY. QSL via each operator's home call sign with a self-addressed stamped envelope or via the Bureau. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the N0 DRC repeater serving Trinidad, Colorado. A Washington State resident has been warned by the FCC that he could face some severe penalties unless he terminates the use of what the regulatory agency calls an incidental radiator that is interfering with amateur radio communications in the 40-meter band. Amateur Radio Newsline's Stephen Kinford, N8WB, has the details.
In an April 23rd citation, an order issued to Thomas Edward Rogers of Woodinville, the FCC noted that on May 22, 2013, in response to complaints of interference to licensed amateur radio service operations, an agent from the Enforcement Bureau's Seattle office located the source of transmissions radiating on numerous frequencies between 7 and 8 megahertz to Mr. Rogers' residence. On June 17, 2013, an RFI letter was issued to Mr. Rogers concerning his responsibilities to resolve radio frequency interference issues. Rogers did not respond to the letter, and the Seattle office continued to receive complaints of interference. Agents from the Seattle office returned to Rogers' home on October 30, 2013, and confirmed that the signals emanating from the residence on frequencies between 7 and 8 megahertz were still active and continued to cause interference to a licensed radio service. Now, in its citation and order, the FCC has ordered Thomas Edward Rogers to stop operating devices that are causing interference to licensed radio operations and to comply with federal rules and regulations related to radio frequency devices. This includes consumer and industrial devices such as lighting ballasts that utilize radio frequencies in their operation. Failure to take action to resolve the interference may result in severe penalties, including fines up to $16,000 per day. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, NAWB, reporting right next to Norris Lake, Tennessee.
Rogers was also given 30 calendar days to respond in writing to the citation and must state that he has ceased operating the incidental radiators and describe the specific actions taken or planned to eliminate all harmful interference. The response must be signed under penalty of perjury. The FCC has proposed a penalty of $15,000 against Jose Alejandro Aguilar for apparently operating an unlicensed radio station in Louisville, Kentucky. The commission says that it had previously warned Aguilar in person that such unlicensed operations are illegal, and he admitted that he operated the radio station without a license. But, says the FCC, Jose Aguilar continued to operate the radio station notwithstanding the warning. This, says the regulatory agency, says that this demonstrates a deliberate disregard for the commission's authority and its rules, and as such warrants a significant penalty. Aguilar was given the usual 30 days to pay or to file an appeal. FCC Commissioner Ajit Pai has set the end of October as the target for getting the regulatory agency's AM revitalization plan completed. He made that comment on Monday, May 5th, in a speech to the Pennsylvania Association of Broadcasters gathered in Hershey, Pennsylvania. During his talk, Pai said that time isn't on the side of the grand old AM band, so he wants to commit to getting the FCC's work done by Halloween. Pai noted that the FCC proposals will not be a panacea for the real problems confronting AM broadcasters that they would help. He added that he plans to hold a series of meetings with stakeholders to discuss these proposals. The Hurricane Watch Net that provides communications to and from hurricane-threatened and affected areas is looking to add to its roster of net control stations. In addition to severe weather spotting, net control stations have added responsibilities that include the relaying of weather reports to and from the National Hurricane Center in Miami and to other net controllers as long as a storm is within 300 miles of the U.S. coast. They also spend a time monitoring the Hurricane Watch online chat room for developments coming their way via the Internet. Living in a location on the East Coast or Gulf Coast is desirable, as are bilingual operators. Prospective members in Latin America or the Caribbean are needed as well. More information can be found at tinyurl.com/join-hwn-ncs. If you'll be driving from Indiana to this year's Dayton Hamvention, you'll find some good VHF and UHF communications along the way. This, as K9NZF Systems and the Chief Anderson Amateur Radio Club announced the Megalink Special Event Wide Area Voice Network for this year's event. The Megalink Network was conceived as a way to provide FM mobile voice coverage from central Indiana all the way to Dayton, Ohio, and onto the grounds of the Hara Arena, which is the Dayton Hamvention's home base. Core systems participating in the operation are located in Anderson, Modoc, and Greenwood, Indiana, along with a repeater on-site at the Hamvention itself. More information, including frequencies, coverage area, and Echolink connections, is online at www.k9nzf.com. Simply click on the words Hamvention Megalink. The annual Microwave Update, or MUD Conference, will be held on October 24th and 25th in Rochester, New York, at the Rochester Marriott Airport Hotel. The Rochester VHF Group Conference, where hams from all over the world have the opportunity to discuss the latest technical developments and operating achievements taking place in the 902 MHz and up amateur radio frequencies. There will be test equipment for measurements, including noise figure up to 47 GHz, available on site. For full details and registration, go to the Microwave Update 2014 website at microwaveupdate.org. Some names in the news. The accomplishments of two astronauts who helped inspire another generation of space explorers have been honored for their achievements on orbit. Shannon Lucid and Jerry Ross, the former N5SCW of the Space Shuttle era, were inducted into the U.S. Astronaut Hall of Fame during a ceremony at the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex on May 3rd. Shannon Lucid flew aboard the Atlantis three times and is the only American woman to serve aboard the Russian Mir space station, from where she operated the R0MIR radio gear. Jerry Ross was the first person to complete seven space shuttle missions. Five of those were aboard Atlantis. He spent more than 1,393 hours in space and 58 hours 18 minutes on nine spacewalks. During the ceremony, each told of the challenges, triumphs, and lighter moments of their careers in space to an audience assembled underneath Shuttle Atlantis. As reported in the current issue of the German magazine Funk Amateur, retiree Volker Luce, DK2MT, will start an almost 500-mile walk from his home in Haltern, Germany, to the Ham Radio Hamfest in Friedrichshafen. But that's not all. Luce is not planning to walk on flat ground. Rather, he is a summits-on-the-air enthusiast, and his route will take him up and down 40 mountains during his 47-day walk. DK2MT plans to cover about 12 miles a day, including stops to operate with his Electcraft KX3 and a VHF handheld. His on-the-air operation will be mainly on CW using an inverted V antenna supported by a telescoping pole. Mid-Ulster, Ireland amateur radio club member Summer McCormick, MI6YLT, was only 12 when she received her amateur radio license in 2013. Now her sister Grace, aged 10, has received her license, and the call sign MI6YLG. Both sisters are now members of the British Young Ladies Amateur Radio Association. A video of Summer on 20 meters is at tinyurl.com/summer-on-the-air. And not to be outdone, back here in the United States, Las Vegas Review Journal reports that Zorian Connell, KG7KNK, has passed his amateur technician class exam at the age of 8. Connell, who was in third grade, passed his test on April 5th and received his license on April 11th. He is thought to be the youngest radio amateur in the state of Nevada. By the way, KG7KNK is no stranger to radio communication. He obtained his General Mobile Radio Service authorization and call sign WQNZ596 when he was age 5. This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. Something new called spin waves could make electronics 1,000 times more efficient than current machines. This by using magnetic materials to control the passage of electrons through transistor switches. Here's Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3TZD.
As computers become more advanced, the silicon chips that house these small switches that make up logic gates used to perform computing functions get smaller and smaller. As the chips and switches get smaller and more are squeezed closer together, it gets harder to keep the electrons flowing where they need to without jumping to other components. Now researchers at UCLA found that by introducing multiferrotic magnetic materials, they created a switch that could be turned on or off simply by applying alternating voltage. This creates an oscillating electric field within a piezoelectric material, which generates spin waves that inducted along a nickel film. These steps caused power to move through the material in a wave that matches the oscillation frequency of the electromagnetic field called a spin wave bus. The difference between using spin waves to carry electrons and letting them flow naturally is similar to the difference between a river and a wave. By powering future devices by varying the amounts of voltage used, Less power is used overall by virtue of the low voltage part of the wave. At the same time, the leaking transistor problem is solved, eliminating wasted power and allowing for the potential that spin waves could make electronics 1,000 times more efficient in the future. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD reporting.
You can find a link to the complete and in-depth report on this subject in the printed edition of this week's Amateur Radio Newsline report. Some good news out of South Africa. Almost a year ago, the South African Radio League obtained a license from the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa, or ICASA, to do propagation research on 5250 and 5260 kilohertz. This work is in support of the 2015 World Radio Conference Agenda Item 1.4, which will consider a possible new allocation to the amateur service from 5250 to 5450 kilohertz. To support the agenda item propagation conditions, frequency sharing studies on the impact to other services currently allocated in the band and in the adjacent bands would need to be carried out. So last year, the South Africa Radio League submitted a proposal to the Council of ICASA for the sponsorship of long-term license. The South Africa Radio League has now received the official license, which is valid through October 31st, 2015. Now in association with the Kempton Park Amateur Radio Technical Society, some early results of the recent Whisper digital mode experiments have been released. More about this at www.sarl.org.za on the propagation research page. Amateur radio got a very brief mention in an article on making music for the British Doctor Who series from broadcast test equipment at the Radiophonic Workshop. The story in the United Kingdom newspaper The Register titled Delia and the Doctor, How to Cook Up a Tune for a Time Lord. Among other things, it describes the BBC's Wobulator, which was basically a beat frequency oscillator used by hams to receive CW and SSB, and how it was used in the creation of the tune. In DX, LA0HF is now operational as TY2BP from Benin. Activity is on 20, 17, 15, 12, 10, and 6-meter SSB, but the length of his stay is not known at this time. QSL via IK2IQD. VA1AXC/CY0 is now active from the Sable Islands for 2 months as part of his work rotation. If you work him, please QSL via JE1LET. EA5IDQ will be active stroke TF from Iceland between May 11th and the 22nd. This will be his first de-expedition, and he will be operating holiday style on 40 through 10 meters using SSB and several digital modes. QSL via his information on QRZ.com. DK7TX will be active as stroke P from Spiekeroog Island between June 11th and the 17th. Listen out for him mainly on 20, 15, and 10 meters. QSLs go to his home call sign either via the Bureau or electronically using eQSL. AI2N, N2ZN, and WJ2O will be operational as PJ4J from Bonaire between May 21st and the 28th. Their trip is timed to coincide with the CQ Worldwide CW contest on May 24th and 25th, which they plan to enter as a multi-operator, single-transmitter, all-band station. QSL is directed on the air. DK2WV and DJ9AF will be active as 7Q7WV from the Karanga Museum in Malawi through May 21st. Listen out for them on 160 through 6 meters using CW, SSB, and RTTY. QSL direct via the Bureau or electronically using Logbook to the World. Last, by no means least, JA1NLX will be active as 3D2YA from Mana Island in the Mamanuka group between October 3rd and the 9th. His operations will be on 30 through 10 meters using mainly CW with some SSB and digital if possible. QSL via JA1NLX direct or via the OQRS. Do not send cards via the Bureau for this operation. And finally this week, another success for Leo Bondar, M0XER, and his long-duration radio balloon flights equipped with ham radio positioning gear. Here's Amateur Radio Newsline's Hal Rogers, K8CMD, with the details.
Last week, it was Leo Bondar's floater balloon called B-46 that flew from the United Kingdom eastward over Greenland and then looped back over Europe, finally ending its adventure near the Ukraine border. Now comes Leo's balloon B-47 that was launched on Monday, April 28th. It spent the next 8 days floating across Europe and Asia at an altitude of around 39,000 feet, more than 7 miles, all the while sending back telemetry on 434.500 megahertz, upper sideband, using the amateur radio data mode Contestia 8/250. B-47's journey took it from its launch point in the United Kingdom over the English Channel to France, Italy, Greece, Bulgaria, Ukraine, Russia, Kazakhstan, Mongolia, China, North Korea, and Japan, where it was last reported on Monday, May 5th. From there, it was headed out northeast over the Sea of Okhotsk toward the Bering Sea on a direct course toward Alaska, if it makes it that far. If it goes to sea, tracking may be difficult for a while, as there are very few land masses over most of the projected flight path. Depending on the altitude, the 12-gram, 3-foot balloon could have a radio range of 180 to 300 miles, but balloon flight B-47 might be out of range of any tracking station. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Hal Rogers, K8CMD.
You can see the latest update on this medium-altitude ham radio floater at tinyurl.com/LeoBalloonB47. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the South African Radio League, the Southgate News, Twit TV, Australia's WIA News, and you, our listeners, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. Before we go, a reminder that the nominating season for the 2014 Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award is now open. Created in 1986, this award is offered to recognize the achievements of a radio amateur age 19 or younger for his or her accomplishments in service to the nation, his or her community, or to the advancement of the state of the art through amateur radio. Nominees must reside in any one of the United States' 50 states, its possessions, or in any of the 10 Canadian provinces. Complete details, rules, and a required nominating form in Microsoft Word format are available on our website at www.arnewsline.org/YHOTY. Nominating forms can also be obtained by sending a self-addressed stamped envelope to Amateur Radio Newsline, Inc., Young Ham of the Year Award, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. Please note that all nominating forms and support documentation become the property of the Amateur Radio Newsline and cannot be returned. The cutoff date for nominations to be postmarked or electronically filed is midnight on May 30, 2014. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF at the editor's desk, I'm Ralph Squillaci, KK6ITB, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2014, all rights reserved.